This is the Tribune Audio Network.
This episode of Eat It Virginia is brought to you by your locally owned and operated McDonald's restaurants. The McRib is back October 14th.
We like to think we have something for everybody, from like a really cool wine list to cheap canned beers to cool cocktails. We're open until 2 a.m. every single day. You know, like, we want to be a bar for everybody. And I think a lot of people have this misconception that we are a speakeasy, which is like kind of funny because we have big wide open windows and a sign that says bar outside.
It's Monday, September the 9th. We are at the Jasper with Matthias, T, and Brandon. I've probably had 14 shots of different distilleries in the state of Virginia by the time you listen to this, and people are pretty pissed off about a chicken sandwich. Welcome to Eat It Virginia.
Hello and welcome to Eat It Virginia. My name is Scott Wise. I'm the co-host of this lovely podcast, and I'm joined, as always, by my co-host, Roby Martin. Roby, we're in Carytown today.
We are in Carytown today, and if you can hear all the stuff in the background, that is our guests today. They are setting up their bar.
Who are our guests today?
That's Ice you need for drinks that you're listening
ice
to right
tea?
Now. We do have T. Leggett.
Vanilla Ice?
He's not Vanilla Ice. He's
Ice Cube?
The T. Leggett. We have Brandon Peck, and we have Matthias Haglund today.
The brain trust behind the Jasper.
They are the three guys you see most. You don't typically see Kevin Liu, who's also their fourth partner, who is the owner of Carytown Cupcakes, which is where the bar is located next to.
And we are going to get into their origin story, what inspires them to be great barmen, and kind of the whole idea behind the place. It's really unique for not only Richmond, but for Virginia.
And one of them's going to make me a martini.
Only one of them?
Well, I mean, all three of them are going to talk about it, but one of them will make a martini.
Before we get too deep into this podcast episode, we wanted to thank you guys for listening and downloading our episodes. You know, when we first started, it was building slowly, as things do. And over the last few months, the show has really, at least in terms of listeners and downloaders, it's really exploded a little bit. So we wanted to thank...
I'm just going to say it. We're averaging about downloads a week, which is absolutely amazing. And if Scott puts this in the podcast, I'll be surprised. But we have about... downloads a week, which has been great, guys, and we really, really thank you. So if you'll leave us a review and tell us what you want to hear, what you want us to stop doing, if you shoot Scott an email at eatitvirginia@gmail.com, I promise you he'll respond.
You know what's not in Carytown?
What is this?
Popeye's chicken.
Yes, and you know what? I don't think anybody's going to be going to Popeye's for a while.
So as you guys know, for the last few, well, I guess all summer, at least the last month or so, Popeye's released their spicy chicken sandwich, which went viral, and there was lines all over town. People were waiting hours to get this chicken sandwich.
Broad Street was backed up.
I think it was multiple streets around town.
It was pandemonium.
Yeah, it was pretty wild. So Roby came to me with an idea about capitalizing on the Popeye's chicken craze and figuring out which Richmond restaurants serve the best chicken sandwich.
So we have so many great chicken sandwiches. I feel like if you're going to give $6 to Popeye's, you should give $6 to a local Richmond restaurant.
So Roby submits her article for WTVR.com, which you can read right now. It's on our app and on the website. And she lists, you know, half a dozen, what was it, six, seven?
Six. It's for Channel 6.
Okay, beautiful. Channel 6. I love it. Six restaurants that you should go and check out their sandwich. We post the article. It immediately shoots up to the top of our... We have like analytics that tell us who's reading what. Shoots up to the top, is there all day. And then the hate mail starts coming in.
I did get a little hate mail. And actually, I'm still getting a little chicken sandwich hate mail.
Before we get to the hate mail, I should have... What were some of the restaurants? Can you give us like maybe two that you recall off the top of your head so people can read the article? And then...
So I bet you're not familiar with the Chicken Box.
I'm not.
So yeah, you should go there.
All right. And do you remember another one you can give people a little taste, a little tease?
There's a food truck called The Bet that you might want to try, but it's you got to look at their menu because sometimes they have it, and sometimes it's fried chicken on a taco.
You gave us six great suggestions. Obviously, there's probably more you could have added to the list,
there's
but it was Channel 6. We're not Channel 45.
There's hundreds of restaurants that you could add to the chicken sandwich
list,
yes.
Channel 2000. Channel 6, six restaurants. What were a couple that you heard feedback from your friends and frenemies?
So Loco Eatery, which is also a food truck, they have... I had a lot of people send me messages about, and Hot Chick, which is downtown, which is an Eat Restaurant Partners restaurant. I've got a lot of messages about that guy.
And was there a controversial place that you left off the list?
I think that you're pushing the buttons right here. But
just
of course
it.
There is okay. a great restaurant, Cezanne, who has a very nice chicken sandwich as well.
And a great chicken biscuit.
The chicken biscuit is outstanding.
So Roby, we're in a bar now at the Jasper, one of the best bars, I would say, in the state of Virginia.
Yes.
You had another alcohol experience you want to tell the listeners about.
Currently, as they're listening to this, I am visiting almost all 28 distilleries in the state of Virginia.
How does one get on that train?
There's a bus.
It's a bus. Okay. Yes. How does one get on that bus?
You talk to the individuals from Virginia Spirits, and I'm going to do some technical tastings in several different places. A couple of them here in Richmond, like Virago, which I don't know if you've been to, or Reservoir, which you also should check out. So I am...
A technical tasting. That sounds like a racket to me.
It is. It's a great way to taste liquor.
So is it a tour you signed up for, or they invited you on to taste?
They invited me on the tour, which is really nice of them. I will be with individuals like a writer from Playboy and Esquire. A couple
is that
of
the same writer or two writers?
He is the same okay. writer.
I only get Playboy for the articles anyway.
It's
so
good.
I'm
well,
sure
he's
I'm going to read that.
He's a great writer, so
out.
That's good that you get
excellent.
It. I'll be with a guy from bourbon.com. Another writer from Better Homes and Gardens. So essentially, I'm like at the bottom of the totem pole for writers.
I guess my email got lost somewhere.
Yeah.
Probably in my spam folder.
You got to write a
it
chicken sandwich
a lot,
article.
I guess so.
We're back at Barrel Thief today.
From cocktails to wine and cheese.
Booth, we tried last time a brie and a sparkling wine.
That's right.
Up next, I don't think you're going to believe this, but another Best in Show was made by a 15-year-old.
You mean a 15-year-old cheese?
No, like a 15-year-old girl.
Oh, a teenager made this.
What is
yes.
one who makes cheese called? Cheesemaker? Is there a word?
Yeah, I think they're called a cheesemaker. And then there's the word for someone who like moves cheese starts with an A. Is it allure?
Cheese mover?
Well,
like,
it's weird to
move it around the aging.
Yeah, like actually keep it in the aging process. Is it called an? I don't know.
Oh yeah, gosh, I don't know that one.
Sorry. An allure?
I'm looking it up.
Allure?
I'm looking it up. You guys talk.
I don't. Anyway, it is an interesting name for the cheese. I'm gonna call it a cheese mover because I don't have a better word.
Cheese mover, cheese maker. Yeah, she's a cheese maker.
So this cheese is from Shooting Star Creamery, which is in California, and it. Is truly, it's called Aries. It's a sheep's milk cheese. Mm. They have very few sheep. And actually, sadly, you were able to get this one here in Richmond. But the sheeps are going to go, sheep, as in sheep plural with no S, are going to go into hibernation, I guess. And they don't get here, like in September, they don't get milked. No?
Sheeps do hibernate.
No,
I have
they
heard
don't.
That.
They didn't. It's not. I don't know. They don't go. I'm calling it hibernation because that's the best thing I know. They go
you mean
on
they
vacation.
They stop producing milk. Yeah, I think it's like two times a year that animals
yes.
produce milk. It's when they, you know, they have their young.
Can you call it hibernation?
I don't. Well, yeah. You can call it. You can call it whatever you want.
All right.
That
I mean,
works.
I'm not a cheese person.
Person with the cheese.
They go on maternity Monger? Leave. No, it's not maternity leave because that's when they actually.
Yes, they go on maternity leave. That's when they make the milk. So, what's going on here, Booth? You and I
rails.
Know a ton about cheese.
Where do babies come from?
What are the, what is
where
the,
do baby sheep come from?
Tell us about the birds and the bees, Scott.
on our third glass, maybe.
Yeah.
Oh, good. All right, back to the cheese.
This cheese is really good.
It's incredible. It's really incredible. I guess she has the Shooting Star Creamery is like her own thing, mm-hmm. not even part of her parents.
Mm-hmm.
She wanted to start making cheese. This is her own recipe.
Yeah.
I think it tastes, honestly, I think it tastes more like a non-aged Gouda. Everybody else says
yeah.
it kind of tastes like a Swiss.
Like, it's kind of a mix of those two for me. They call it an Alpine cheese,
mm-hmm.
which is like deep and nutty and real, like, kind of subtle flavors, but they just go on and on and on, and they're. Just beautiful. There's the little crystals in there.
I was going to say, I love the salt pockets that you get
oh
in there.
Oh, my gosh.
It's a really, really tasty cheese.
I'm sorry, where'd you say this is from?
This is from California. It's called Aries Shooting Star Creamery.
I guess her family has a creamery.
They do.
And so this is like her first solo project
very
she's
salty,
working on.
Very salty but smooth.
It's insanely good, actually. Mm-hmm. And then what am I pairing with an Alpine cheese?
An Alpine wine.
Oh, look at you.
Yeah.
last week it was different with different. This week it's same with same.
Exactly. Cool. Yeah, so last time we did like cleansing bubbles to rich the or to wash the richness off your palate. Mm. This time we're pairing a high altitude, crazy French alpine wine.
Whoa.
That's an oxidized style to go with this deep, rich, subtle.
I honestly didn't think it was going to go together on my first sip, Bear. I thought I was like, and then the end of it is like super great with the cheese.
They're like dancing. It's like they haven't stopped dancing in my mouth.
It smells like a spirit when I first put it to my nose, this wine does.
Oxidize it. That makes sense. It smells like a spirit. Yeah. So good call.
And it so this is cool. This is a style of wine from the Jura region of France, and it's called Vin Jaune, yellow wine. And what they do is they harvest the grapes and they ferment and they barrel it down into old barrels and then they don't touch it for 7 years. So it evaporates and it the level of the wine goes lower and lower and lower all the time until a level it's like a yeast and it's called flor and it grows over the surface of the wine. And that starts, first you get oxidation, right? Because there's like air in the barrel. But then you get this flor yeast that actually starts converting some of the acids into different acids. And it really affects the flavor and turns it into almost like a dry sherry kind of vibe. But it's very distinctive, very unique. And they make it just for cheeses like this. It's wonderful.
So I liked the Brie sparkling wine pairing. I thought that was great.
Yeah.
This is like right up my alley. I feel like you could drink a half glass of this Vin Jaune. Is that how you say it?
Say again?
I don't care. Vin Jaune?
Oh, Vin Jaune. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's how you say it?
Yeah, you got
yellow
it.
Yellow wine. I feel like you could drink like a little half glass of this and have like a little chunk of cheese and it's like a beautiful night.
It will change your life. For the better this time.
This will go perfect for a date. Remember last week we were like, not so great on a date if it goes wrong. This isn't ever going to go wrong.
Never going to go wrong. Yeah. Guaranteed, 100%.
Absolutely. Can I buy this wine
that's
here?
What I need.
Yeah, we usually have a bottle or two kicking around. It's not something that is very well known. It's sort of an obscure wine. Also, this one is a little more expensive than most of the stuff I bring, just because of the aging process and the...
What's the price point on this one?
It's around $50, and we're talking about a half bottle here, so
second date
it's
expensive. Material.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, I love
not
your second
date.
Yeah, I know. I'm going on two dates with you.
Yeah. For this, two dates. Definitely two dates.
He's so naughty.
He's the greatest. If you can hear the noise in the background, that's because we record on location at Barrel Thief, which is a boutique wine shop in the near West End. The address booth is...
5805 Patterson Avenue.
Address is 5805 Patterson Avenue. You can ask for the owner, Booth Hardy, who sits with us every podcast as our podcast sommelier. Want more food in your ear? Subscribe to the podcast or find us on Twitter at Eat It Virginia, Instagram at Eat It Virginia, or Facebook at Eat It Virginia.
And now, back to the show.
So hi, guys.
Hello.
Welcome. Hello. I'm super excited to have you all here. Well, actually, we're in your space. Scott, we are at the Jasper today.
This is our first triple interview, I think.
Is it our first one?
I think triple interview.
So we have some serious firepower sitting across from us.
Let's get into it.
I want to. So Matthias, walk me through how you got to the Jasper. I mean, like, really, like, where'd you start?
I live over in Northside, so I drive up Ash Boulevard.
You guys have worked far too long together.
This is going to be a long interview.
Man.
Well, I've been tending bar since, sorry,
no,
microphone.
No, I like it. You've been tending bar since when?
Since I was in undergrad and moved away up to New Jersey, which let me do a little bit of work in... Princeton at the bar where I was managing, but also in Philly, a little bit in New York, and found my way back to Richmond, managing the bar at Comfort for a little while I searched with my sister and my brother-in-law to find a restaurant to open, a space where we all wanted to open a restaurant. That eventually was Heritage. We opened in 2012. I sold my share, my third of that, to them in 2016. I think 2016, which then let all of us start working on this project, which opened early in 2018.
So you are from Richmond,
yep,
originally,
yep,
and circled back.
Grew
to
up
open
all
Richmond.
Over town. I guess I claim Ashland primarily.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah.
I want to back up a little bit to 2012. You said that's when you opened Heritage.
Mm-hmm.
That was like the first time I think I walked into a restaurant as an adult, and I was like, this is what service, and like that's the first restaurant that really opened the door to where I am today, however many years, 7 years later, where I'm hosting a co-hosting a food podcast. It really was Heritage that made me feel comfortable, made me feel welcome. How did you cultivate that culture there?
I think the cool thing about being a part of Heritage was like between my sister, my brother-in-law, and I, we had kind of three different sides that we each individually brought to the table. You know, he had the kitchen, she ran the dining room, I had the bar, and we were all very passionate about each thing. And when you're in an environment surrounded by people who are passionate about stuff that intensely, it kind of breeds those same passions in the other people working with you. So hospitality was really important, but like in a friendly, comfortable way, just like, you're there in our spot, like in our house, we want to make sure you're having a good time. And, you know, the same applied to the guest experience at the bar, same applied to like the attention to details in the bar, in the food, in everything we tried to do. I've always felt if you're going to try and do something, you need to try to do it to the best of your ability and have integrity with everything that you do. Which, you know, hopefully translates into something for you as a guest.
Where did you learn that?
Worked with a lot of intense people. It kind of got passed into me. So reading, working with fun people, stuff like that.
So you mentioned that Heritage was a family affair.
Mm-hmm.
The decision to leave, what did that do to you, or how was that decision?
Oh, it was fine. I mean, you know, family businesses can be really fun, and then there are times that they can be intense, and it definitely did a lot for me, for my career. And after, I think, 4 years of family business, that was enough, and just sold my third to them. It was time to see what else there was.
Brandon, how did you get here?
My first bar job was working at Ipanema Cafe. I was there for about 2.5 years before I took a part-time job at the Roosevelt, where I kind of reconnected with T, got to know him better, and started to kind of like collaborate on stuff, and worked at Portrait House for a little while in there too.
Serious music nights, I hear, at the Portrait House once upon a time.
Very serious.
Mm-hmm. It's my very serious sad face, if you can see me. T, how did you get to the Jasper?
I grew up in Danville, Virginia. So I got my start busting suds at the local Western Sizzlin'.
Busting suds?
Busting suds.
Love that.
That's where I really learned work ethic at the Sizzler, because that place gets going on the weekends.
It's sizzling.
It's a lot of dishes. I think that's where I found my passion for just like hard work and hospitality.
And then you came here because?
To open up the Jasper with Matisse.
No. How did you get to Richmond?
I graduated college, and this was an easy move. I had a lot of friends here, a lot of family. It was just going to be, honestly, like kind of temporary stepping stone to go somewhere else. And I fell in love with Richmond and been here for 17 years.
Which is a little while. Did you work at Sticky Rice at some point?
I didn't, but Brandon did.
So did you guys meet there, or did you meet at the Roosevelt?
We met through bands playing shows together back in the day. And then, like Brandon was saying earlier, we reconnected at the Roosevelt. Kendra actually hired Brandon and brought him over from Ipanema, and she was like, yeah, I think you might know this one guy, Brandon. And I was like, yeah, totally. But we hadn't seen each other in a while, and we had our first like meeting with staff or like training or whatever, and we were both like, nice, this is gonna be fun.
So his job at the Roosevelt had nothing to do with you. I always assumed that he came over because you were there.
No, you know,
such a big bromance, I assume that's how it worked.
Yeah, kind of did, you know. You know, we were in the process of figuring out staff and hiring people and Kendra was like, it was funny because she didn't mention it first, I don't think. She was like, I had this one guy, you know, you would love him. He's such a hard worker, and he'd be willing to come over and help us open the Roosevelt. Okay, yeah, thanks for helping me out, like, with one staff member. And and then later on, she was like, oh, I think you know him, actually. And I was like, oh, of course, like, awesome. This is great.
So when the three of you connected after this huge trajectory through Richmond, what did you guys say? Hey, we all like drinks. Let's start a speakeasy-type bar with tufted couches?
Yes.
Those are the exact words.
I mean, we didn't call it a speakeasy, but other than that, that's pretty accurate.
T and I had been talking about like trying to do something for years. I mean, we looked at a number of spaces around town over the course of like 3 or 4 years. And after Heritage, our other partner, Kevin Liu, who owns Carrytown Cupcakes, found out that this space was becoming available and reached out to us and was like, hey, like, I know y'all trying to do something. I have the beginnings of this weirdo idea for a bar. Let's see if we can like find a way to make it work. Yeah. And we all got together. It turned into something that really excited us, and we just kind of went for it. And we were fortunate that Brandon was there to be a part of it too, and grace us with his presence.
It was like the missing puzzle piece. We're like, hold on.
Yeah.
We have to convince Brandon to do this as well.
So yeah. What started your love of cocktails is where I'm going, guys. Like, how did you guys get so, I mean, it's pretty, you guys are pretty idiosyncratic here with your cocktail recipes and sort of the drive and the mission and the look of everything. So what pushed that?
I mean, speaking for me, I'd say that, I kind of got into bartending because I was playing in bands and wanted to make a lot of money really quickly. And like a lot of other things in my life, when I kind of got past the point of like, wow, so much money, I like started geeking out on other things. And like I got really excited about beer and I got really excited about liquor. And Kendra actually bought me a really cool book when I was working at Ipanema that kind of jump started the kind of creative juices as far as making cocktails. And then I like wrote a cocktail menu there, and kind of embarrassing to look at those drinks now, but
I think all our first menus probably are.
Yeah. But yeah, and then going to work at Roosevelt with T, he definitely kind of straightened out a lot of my bad habits, and I don't know, it's just kind of built since then.
Do you have like things that you can say that you learned from the Roosevelt, which is sure. Where I first came across you, T?
For sure. Oh, so much to Kendra and Lee. I mean, they just a wealth of everything, from random things to very specific things to just, and you just, all that stuff rubs off on you, you know, and you just learn and you take a little bit from them that you liked, a little bit from, you know, them that you like, put it all together. Now we combine it with everybody else's experience and then hopefully have this new thing that's, you know, greater, you know, than the sum of its parts type thing.
I think we should play a little game.
I want to ask them what their strengths and weaknesses are.
I was going to ask that same question, but I was going to have them
tell each other.
Yeah,
I'm for it. All right. Okay, I'm totally for it. So when you own a business with someone, you think that perhaps maybe the individuals make up one big whole, which is what you just stated. Can you tell me, Matthias, what Brandon's strengths and his weaknesses are?
Jesus.
Why do you assume Brandon has weaknesses?
You know, he probably is Superman, but that's not going to be up to you to tell me.
I think Brandon has an incredible talent. If we're talking about like drink building, at layering very complex flavors in a way that I would never have thought of. He also is a really great talent at taking my crazy and presenting it to the world in a way that makes sense.
We have the same relationship, by the way.
Yes, I have to deal with his crazy. Mm-hmm. It's hard.
I don't think they believe that one bit.
I don't care if they believe it. I just said it out loud, so therefore it's so.
Yeah. I think the three of us all together as three front-of-the-house personalities running a bar, we can sometimes, you know, take our time and our approach to things. But when we get there, I think it's usually at a pretty cool spot.
Brandon, what are Matthias's strengths and weaknesses, other than his crazy?
It can be my strength and my weakness.
It's a gift and a flaw, I promise.
I think like the most obvious strength is his approach to hospitality and like the way that he communicates with guests when they're in here. It's kind of amazing watching you like have these deep in-depth conversations with strangers like day in and day out. Which I guess could also be a weakness at some points, because sometimes you...
So I should probably be making...
Lose guests.
All of a sudden you're like, I could use help back here.
Yeah. But I mean, it's kind of amazing. Like there are several people that work here that exhibit that kind of personality, and like they can really just like create this bond with people in a way that like I don't really, and I don't mind working extra hard when I'm with those people, because I know that like they're providing a stellar experience for the customers while I'm like getting drinks out to people. And I mean, everybody has good days and bad days, you know, so work to your strengths.
Sure. Now, you guys want to gang up on T? Because I feel like he can take it.
He has broad shoulders.
I know. I'm always picking on him.
You're the weight of the world.
What are T's strengths and weaknesses? He has no
hard-hitting questions.
How is that a hard-hitting question? You guys work with each other. You're very, very familiar. I mean, even
like
with your
therapist, all of a sudden.
Significant other, you know. I mean, you spend probably more time with each other than you do with your own families.
Yeah, for sure.
You want to be aware. I imagine you guys are.
He's got a bad back.
Definitely my weakness.
All right.
All right. I think we're done there. So what do you guys wish that Richmond knew about you all that, from a bar standpoint, that you don't feel like they quite get yet? I mean, there was a line for the Christmas cocktails.
Sure.
So obviously
every
they're
night.
Getting, I mean, so like obviously they get something. But what do you feel like you wish you could reach out and express a little bit more?
I think like one big, like super important quality of this bar going into opening this place was that this can be like anybody's bar. And... you know, we like to think we have something for everybody, from like a really cool wine list to, you know, cheap canned beers to cool cocktails. We're open until 2 a.m. every single day. You know, like we want to be a bar for everybody. And I think a lot of people have this misconception that we are a speakeasy, which is like kind of funny because we have big wide open windows and a sign that says bar outside.
And I totally misnamed it just earlier, and you're just making sure you hammer that home. They are not a speakeasy.
It's like the antithesis of a speakeasy.
Perfect. I think that you guys just started happy hour, correct?
Mm-hmm.
So that makes it, does he feel like that's made you all more accessible, or do you feel like that's maybe something you'll keep on and then take off and then keep on and take off based on what you see?
We'll definitely keep it on. It'll probably change shapes a little bit. We haven't really started promoting it because we're still kind of trying to figure out like what works for us, but it'll keep being there. I mean, it's 7 days a week, 5 to 7. We've got like a rotating cocktail special every day and like different boiler makers and some food specials. I think the big thing on there for us is like we have $6 classic cocktails, and like there are regular house specs for these things. So the idea is that like maybe we turn somebody on to drinking Manhattans or martinis or daiquiris or something when they would normally just be like, what's the best drink on the cocktail menu? Like, this one's $6 and it's delicious.
And I hear you guys are part of Fireflower Fork this year. Yeah?
We are.
Okay, so I obviously love that festival, and I'm pretty solidly there all 4 days, so yay. What are you guys doing?
A little bit of change this year is trying to do more on the beverage side of things. You know, they've always let chefs and restaurants bring in guest chefs and do these dinners. And then would usually always have some kind of after party, you know, official for the attendees and visiting chefs. So we kind of reached out to them. We're like, well, we could do this on our side now. We have so many, you know, relationships with people outside of Richmond, that it totally makes sense now that we could do the same thing and bring in guest bartenders.
That's
so
a whole other layer to Firefly and Fork that hasn't been there before.
I was going to say, there's not a whole lot of guest. I mean, I've seen few, but not a ton of guest cocktail years.
For sure. So
bourbon sommeliers. Yeah. Jokes.
So we've always been huge fans of Copycat in D.C., which is a bar on 8th Street. And
Dumplings and Goldfish and Sweet Cocktails.
Yeah, for sure. And always enjoyed them. They've come to Richmond. You know, we've developed some smaller relationships with some of the staff and reached out to them. They're going to come down that Sunday, which will be the last day of the festival, and take over the Jasper. So for that night, the Jasper will be Copycat. Super excited about it.
Copycat 2.0. Copycat Virginia. I really like it. That sounds great.
Virginia's for copycat lovers.
It really is. So I think I'm getting ready to have one hard-hitting question for you guys before I let them actually go to work.
Okay.
Are you ready for it? You want to go first? Okay. Mine's bigger than yours, I promise.
Ooh.
I'm going to let that one go.
Yeah.
I'm not going to even...
Look at you let that slide. Very
that's
nice.
So great. So this place fascinates me, just from the minute you opened, even before you opened, when we came to interview you guys about it and what you guys have done here, it's really impressive.
Thank you.
As business owners, what has surprised you the most about running this particular business, the concept, the execution, and the results?
Well, it's an unusual concept for Virginia, because we do, you know, focus more on being a bar than anything else. As such, I think it's been something where we've had to learn new efficiencies and like ways to handle volume that we maybe aren't quite used to.
Can you explain that a little bit?
I mean, yeah, like we serve a ton more drinks than we do food generally. So from a service standpoint, like just purely down to the number of tables that a single server can handle, you know, do we have a 10 or 12 table section? When in a restaurant that does more food, you might have like a 4 table section. And just trying to figure out all the ways that this place is different and how we can kind of use those to differentiate ourselves.
What are some of the things that you might have changed on the fly the last few months, over the last year, that you thought might have been a great idea when the place opened, but now we're rethinking things?
I think, you know, with the longer hours and the more volume late night, just really figuring out how to keep that same level of cocktail making that you would at, say, a restaurant or whatever, that, you know, you have this like truncated, you know, service hours of dinner time, but we're trying to do the same level of cocktails all night long. So prep wise, execution wise, efficiency, you know, how do you keep that level for so much longer and for so much more volume, I think it's been a thing.
And is there a drink, Brandon, that you're particularly proud of that you invented that is your favorite to make, anything like that?
Yes, the genius of layering flavors. What
Big
is your favorite?
Currently, I have a drink on the menu that I like a lot that's like a cognac spiced banana Mai Tai riff thing that I think is pretty delicious, and it's called Zane Banane.
Nice.
It's named
everybody calls Brandon Zane.
Yeah,
Banane.
It's named after me.
Beautiful.
Do you guys follow any of the trends at all, or do you guys try to stick pretty classic with what you have?
Definitely always try to be conscious of what's going on around you or what's people are into or what other people are doing, for sure.
And I should be drinking this riff on a Mai Tai right now?
Oh, the Zane Banane, for sure.
Absolutely. All right, so here goes. I have a question for you all. Is 007 an idiot? Why should it be stirred and not shaken? Why should it not be the way James Bond orders it?
In the movies.
Texture, control over dilution, control over temperature.
Aerates it.
Yeah. I mean, it's stirring a drink, adds less air in. So you get a more velvety texture. It's a less efficient means of chilling and diluting. So what that means is, even though it takes longer, you have more control over where you end up And yeah, you preserve the texture of something more spirituous.
So how should I order a martini?
Any which way you want.
Yep.
You're listening to Eat It, Virginia with Roby and Scott. We're at the Jasper today with Matthias, Brandon, and T.
This episode of Eat It, Virginia was brought to you by your locally owned and operated McDonald's restaurants. National First Responders Day is October 28th. Show your first responder ID for a free sandwich.
This has been a production of the Tribune Audio Network.